Mr. William Holbrook, Reel 8. You were telling me about the retreat from Mons. How long were you with this unit of stragglers?
Oh, about 2 days, I suppose. Might have been two to three days.
How did you find your own battalion again?
Well, they were retreating, you see, but of course they were couldn't travel too far back. They had to keep in line with the other troops. So I happened to pick them up. I was surprised to find them. That night I slept in a in a cornfield. I remember the corn had been cut and sheeked up. It was in September, and my last night with him, I spent all this week stuffed inside and it's in nice and cosy. So I went out to sleep with the others, and while I was looking out, and the Germans, as they were advancing, they were burning the villages. They got near, all about the place, as far as you can see, burning villages, as they were advancing. And of course, they were getting nearer and nearer, but I got up the next morning, we got in touch with some British troops, and I asked if they needed the fusiliers, and they put me right, so I got in touch with them, and I joined up there with them. So I was all right then. They were all right
then. How would you manage for food and things like that while you were with the stragglers? How did you manage?
No, it was very bad for food. You got anything that was left. In fact, it was bad. The whole retreat was bad.
I'll come to the rest. But what did you eat while you were with the stragglers?
Well, these are biscuits and I remember eating a lot of fruit like green apples and things like that. I think most of the people some of the villages that still left give us some bread, but we did nothing else.
What route had you taken back while you were with the stragglers?
Well, we took the main road back, so I don't know. I knew it led from one big town to another, and I know the first big town came was St. Quentin. That was where we got through St.
Quentin. That was with the stragglers you went through St. Quentin.
And then during the next that morning, we were catching up on the retreating British troops, and I asked some fellow there, if he knew where the night brigade was, and some officers told me yes, he knew, and pointed out, and I found the fuse, and I left them. I don't know what happened to the others. I didn't see them. I simply walked off and left them and picked up my own regiment. Yes, I went back with him and see what.
Had you seen any other signs of the Germans beside the burning villages and the cavalry attack while you were with the stragglers?
No, I saw nothing at all. It was the first we saw. Well, shelling was going on, but you couldn't see the German troops themselves. I think they were more or less engaged as Lee Cateau on the right. I think they were ever taking the brunt of the attack. And we were on the left a bit then, and went through Fremiers again, and so I went through St. Quentin.
What was your reception on your unit?
They just said, all right, and because they didn't know what casualties there were, they didn't know they'd been killed or wounded and left behind, they didn't know at all.
Was this when you found your captain, your company captain, was
there? Yes, and he just said, all right, and that's that, and it was I'd been there all the time. And I remember the first morning I was there, the Germans attacked us. It finally got getting nearer and nearer. I was talking about food. Food was very difficult. You see, everything had come up by lorry, not motor, but horse-drawn vehicles. And they could only get a certain... the most difficult feed on the retreat, they can't get too near the retreating army to get the horses away. And under shell fire, horses were very valuable those days. So what they used to do, they used to dump these boxes of biscuits and bully and cans of water on the side of the road. And the first battalion back got the lot. So the one who's in the last of retirement got nothing much, and it had pieces. And we were mostly in the last time on the retreat, the fugitives were. Our brigade was. We got very little food. We got perhaps a box of size bully in this and box of biscuits was left on the side, which is made. Of course, the people the staff and those sort of people were back first. They got all the food. So really, the infantry came off very badly in food on the retreat.
Did you suffer a lot from hunger then? Hmm? Did you suffer yourself from a lot of hunger? Or?
No, I was pretty fit. My feet were bad once.
No, but were you actually hungry?
Oh yes, hungry, yes. And the village was good to us. They'd all give us loaves of bread and things like that, you know, so we were all right. And there's a lot of fruit about we eat. They know the fruit. We could see the retreat from Mons resisted on green apples. But the villagers, as we fell back, the elderly men weren't, well, of course, there were no young men in France, so they'd all been called up. So the only people in these villages were elderly men and women. So when we fell back, they'd been organised by some French officers, I suppose. They dug the trenches for us, so we fought back in the trenches. Every day we fought back at the fresh trenches in the fresh villages, they were all dug for us. It's women and men.
I think they wouldn't be deep trenches, would they?
Oh, no. Just cover, head cover.
So, 2 foot, say? How deep do you think?
Oh, so about a foot.
Oh, only a foot?
Yes. Wouldn't be like they couldn't, the women digging them. They worked hard, and often still digging when we got there, and then they retired into the villages, and we attacked there. I remember on the one occasion, they dug a trench in front of the churchyard, the village's churchyard. And the Germans could come up. They got the faster than us. They could come up easily. So they were fresh too. So they had fresh troops coming up. And this particular morning, we relied on this bit of a trench, and suddenly was attacked by them. And I don't know. They drove us out these little trenches we were in, and I dashed through like the others through this churchyard to pick up the remainder of the troops, where the other companies were. And I can remember these bullets were chipping pieces. I remember as we were going to the churchyard. The bullets they find were chipping pieces out the tombs as we were going along. But that's what but every morning we had to have an attack.
Oh, so what would a typical day include it all in? What would you do?
Well, in the morning, say we'd have to probably be marching overnight.
You'd march during the night.
I remember we went through some forest. We went through, was it Mormel Forest or something like that? It was a hell of a forest. A long way you go through, it's pitch black, and you couldn't see. And out of the job that was, you'd run in the backs of other men's rifles, you know, because you couldn't see the people in front of you. Well, we got through this big forest, and then went from village to village. So by that, as the time went on, a few days went on, the attacks were getting less.
No, but if you could carry on with what you'd do during the day.
I'll be at line of the trenches during the day, but waiting for their attacks. Then soon they got so near that we couldn't hold them back, all that sort of, we had the order to retreat, and we'd retreat into the next ones.
And then march through the night?
Yes.
So you didn't have much chance for actual sleep, or would you sleep when the Germans weren't actually?
No, not sleep at all. You just weary, but you got into a trench waiting for the attack or something, you might have half an hour, you know, and you wake one another, you don't want another long, so you even walk along, some of the men were asleep. I remember one for the run, you've got your rifle on your shoulder, though, like easy carry. I remember this fellow behind me, ran at the butt of mine, and he knocked him out. He's walked along asleep. But I forget the name of the forest. A very big forest it was. And then we got to.
So there was a lot of exhaustion.
Oh yes, there was. Remember carried on the limbers, the gun limbers, and all to get on the way, you know. And I was quite all right. These are. Elderly men, you know, men have been, as I say, reservists and older soldiers and that.
Were the other young soldiers, you know, I mean, the non-reservists, were they generally all right? Was it mainly the reservists then who were?
The majority of I don't suppose reservists were more than about, say, our company was at 100. I don't suppose reservists were more than about 10 to 15.
So it was more widespread than
yes,
that?
Oh, yes, yes. And
when the Germans attacked you, what methods did they use? How would they generally go about it?
Well, they seemed to come up by transport or something, because we were marching all night long, and occupied these trenches where the French had built, these women had dug. Before we knew, within half an hour, they were on us. So how they come along, I don't know. Were they lorries those days? I don't know, but I suppose they did.
Would they always advance in waves, or did they ever have?
They had no wave, no attack like that. It was just simply the first men got there first in the attack. You know, no organised like you did an attack from trench to trench, or nothing like that. It was all open fighting, and perhaps some part of the line further on being in contact with the enemy, and you hadn't seen any. See, it was not an organised.
No, but I mean, what method would they use to attack you? Did they use any particular formations or anything?
Oh, no. We sent forward them. The company go in the wrong line. They go company to company. There was no organised fighting, really. nothing like that so much. They got the close they got, the bit they thought they were, they got there first were the best, they thought they had the best chance.
There's pictures and things often show them as if they were they advanced almost in columns. Would that you know?
Well, they must have come up in columns. We didn't see that. It was too far back.
They actually attacked in columns.
Oh no, 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 no! Didn't attack in columns.
So they break out. From
yes,
a column.
That's right. There's hundreds, thousands of them, of course, but they were advanced on their own, as it were. There didn't seem to be any officers what's in charge of them, and that's what it must have been. But it didn't seem to be any organised attack. It was just attacking where they could.
Off or what? Why exactly would you have to retreat?
Oh yes, we keep them by. Oh yes,
they never actually got to you then.
Not like as doing anything like that. Some have taken prisoners and that. So I'm taking prisoners. Some have got through, but I mean, there's no bayonet fighting. Anything that's as near as all that. It was all rifle fire.
So you why would you retreat? When would you retreat? At what point would they do you think they normally retreated? You normally retreated, sir.
What point retreat? What?
At what point would you retreat?
Oh, what would be at the command of our officers? They'd give the order to retreat. Probably found they was overwhelmed and getting the better, so we retired. And so, retired that day, perhaps. And
so when the situation was looking as if it might go, then you'd retreat before the worst happened, basically.
No, I don't think so. We still thought then that we would draw them in, that we weren't retreating properly. We'd draw them back to over standing battle sometime later on. All the troops thought that. They didn't think they were being beaten back. And I mean, one place I passed through, the parson was bearing his shirt silver. He got a big pit on. He's in his black surplus and that. And I was holding it there for a quarter of an hour or so. Now, what they bring out all the shirt silver, put down, bearing it, and put the turf over it. I often wonder whether he escaped discovery or not. The name of the village was Penjard. I remember that.
Was there any looting or anything like that? Did the troops do any looting or anything like that?
No. They'd take bread if there's any bread about them or food, but no. You never saw any looting at all. No, that's all. The troops were all orderly, and as I say, they thought they were falling back. See, they didn't. They didn't think they had been beaten back. Because then we got to the Marne.
I believe you saw a German cavalry attack, not the one on you, but on your brigade.
Oh, it was afterwards. It was after the Marne. Yes, it was a wonderful.
Oh, well, we'll come to that later then. Yes. So what happened when you got to the Marne?
We got the Marne. We were about the last regiment to go over the bridge at Marne before they blew it up. So the Germans got to the Marne just after we crossed it. So we were all right, we've got the river between us then. And then by then we got they sent some French troops, I think. The French troops have reinforced us somewhere there. And we moved along the Marne and was fighting one side and the other. It was mostly all rifle fire across the water and shell fire. And during the attack, during the Battle of the Marne, I remember it's where this happened. I was sent with another man to watch a road. There was a road unguarded or something coming from out of France towards the Marne. And I was with another, I had to go to cover that, see the report, see what's it. And it was a bit on high ground, or high below, where the rest of our brigade were, night brigade. And a sight I'll never forget that. I suddenly saw the Lincolns was in front, then we came next, and Northumberland, that sort of thing. I never said, his cavalry, it was hundreds and hundreds of them, really, there was. And they attacked on a plane. They attacked from about 700 yards, and the Lincolns was also there, not more than 100, 200 yards, and they absolutely slaughtered. Lincoln knocked them over, he was a sight. You'd never believe, ever seen one like it. I was looking there in comparative safety, watching these cavalry down below be slaughtered in their hundreds. And they drove them back, the Lincolns, they took most of them, drove them back and absolutely decimated them, the cavalry. I see these cavalry with the drawn swords come up in advance, and not unearthly. The Lincolns, whoever was in charge of the Lincolnshire Regiment, must have been very cautious that they were there their fire to within about 400 or 500 yards. And then that was absolute slaughter. And I remember after that day, I was taken down the old my battalion, and all the Lincolnshire Regiment were in they got the German cavalry helmet on.
People were very keen to get souvenirs like that, helmet. Were they very keen to get pickle hobs, you know, German helmets and things like that.
Well, they what?
Were they very keen to get them?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yes, they'd like to get one, especially the... not so much the infantry ones, because they were afterwards, but the cavalry weren't. We had enough of the cavalry helmets. This place was like, I've never seen it on map since. It's a place, I'm almost sure the little village where it took place is called Gibraltar. And I thought to myself, it's funny, the same name as the Gibraltar, but I'm certain that was the name of it. I've never seen any word of it since.
During the retreat and around, during the battles on the Marne, were you still acting as a runner, basically, as an orderly runner?
Oh, yes.
So you'd still, yes. You'd be running backwards and forwards?
Oh, no, I didn't do what, no. I didn't do more a runner, not then. Till sometime after the aim, I think it was. Anyway, on the Marne, I remember going that we held some trenches there, the other side of the Marne, or on the Marne, amongst all these grapevines. And there was fields and fields of grapevines, all beautifully black in September, you see. And I remember digging these trenches to stop the German, and picking these bunches of the black grapes within a foot of you. I remember, we drove them back from there, and then they retired, or they fell back.
But you'd been acting as a runner during the Battle of Mons,
yes.
Hadn't you? But you didn't do that anymore.
Well, not later on in the war.
No, so during the retreat, you were just an ordinary member of
yes,
your company.
Yes, yes. So I was the aim, and that went up till after the Marne. They retired, they retreated after the Marne, and we had to go from there to the Aisne.
Did the supply position improve a little during that advance? The supply position?
Oh, yes. Yes, you got better food, you more of a... in the stand, got it from Paris or some places like that. Down like they came to.
What can you remember about the advance from the Marne to the Aisne?
Marne to the Aisne? Yeah. Yes, the Germans retired and the French went by us in another part of the line. We started going back to the... Although we didn't know where we were going to, because we were going back to the Aisne, where the Germans would make a stand. And on this... We marched in fours from the Marne to the Aisne, part of the way, the main road there, was clear of German troops that we could march in forward. I remember they did for a couple of days was to shell us, advancing troops, and we'd take cover in, there's quite a lot of woods there, we'd take cover in these woods, clear off the main road, take cover in the woods, and the Germans, what they used to do, they used to search these woods with their shrapnel, you go right along your field and go along, all shelled forward and back, so say, 100 to 200 yards away from you. You could even grow gradually too, the first, to kill the troops in the woods and wound them. See, these woods. And I remember they got so near me this particular morning, about 2 days out of Marne, and they were shelling very heavily. This road where I'd been marching with some others, we scattered into the woods, you see, when they shot it. When it got so hot there that we took ran for cover. And the only cover I get was an artillery limber right in the middle of the road. Our artillery, you see, had gone so far. So I died under that. And under there was about 3 or 4 more fellows. And after about a quarter of an hour, and then we got on the road and it would go on. And the remarkable thing is about this, when I got blown up at Sanctuary Wood, I went to hospital, I was taken down to hospital at Atarps on the coast, I think a British hospital. And while there, and the first nurses came in and examined sort of thing and looked after me, and I was in a pretty bad way, really. And I remember you got your notice board on the side of the bed, and I remember one saying to the other, "Oh," she said, "were you in the 4th Royal Fusiliers?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Well, did you know my brother?" Well, I mean, the brother in my family, so I said, or what he said, he was a lieutenant, she said. We never knew more of him. They were ladies, two ladies, lady somebody, and he was a honourable somebody in charge of a party of the troops to come out to join the Fusiliers. I remember seeing him and never saw him since.
I believe you managed to scrounge some so-called wine.
Yes, well,
can you tell us that story?
We retreated back to the Aisne Fours, you see, shows we weren't attacked much, we had no opposition much, anybody some artillery. And I was in the right-hand section of Fours marching to the Aisne. I didn't know where we were going, of course. And I saw some fellows jumping out of the ranks in front of me, about 30, 40 yards in front of me, climbing up this because they abandoned lorries and all sorts of things. All sorts of cars and bicycles and things like that they'd taken from the French and the Belgians on the advance on the Marne. Had to leave them behind. They couldn't get away fast enough, so they all left on the side of the road for a few miles. There was nothing but discarded cars and lorries and bicycles and things like that. So I saw these two fellas jump out of the banks in front of me, climb up this abandoned lorry, come jump down there with two straws in their hands, bottled up this straw with the course of down. I wonder what they've got there, you know. So when I said to the fellas near me, I was on the outside man, I said, look off this rifle, Jack Willie. I said, I'm going to climb and see what they've got in the van. So up I go and scrounged among broken glass and straws and boxes and that, and found two boxes and straws and climbed down there and ran up and caught them up and gave one to the fellow next to me. Apparently he's minding my pack, you see. I mean, maybe he would go off. So after marching about, I suppose, oh, I don't know, I suppose 40 more miles, must have been a long bloody mile to know. We came to the side of the road, he said, so I thought we got a bottle of wine or a bottle of whiskey or something, you see. When we opened, we came a bottle of vitriol water for nearly 50 bloody miles out back. Anyway, they drink and...
While you were advancing at this stage, you know, with very little opposition...
No opposition at all.
Did you think that the war was as good as over? What was thoughts in your head?
Well, I thought then if we didn't back so far, it was meant to have carried on and the war would be over. That's what I thought. There's no opposition. All I didn't notice was that on the side of the road, it was September, that's when the corn was being cut, I noticed elderly men were getting the sheaves of corn together and picking up the dead bodies, like dead Frenchmen that had been killed there, or Germans rather, and burning them on the pile. They've got a pile of their bodies on there. Never seen anything like it. I looked down my head to see these Frenchmen pick up these dead bodies and push them on a burning pile of, you know, rubble. And anyway, we got to a place called Brain, I think, the next town. That's on the way to the Ain. And we stayed there for a time. Brain and a place called Chasmy and Brain, the two villages that was on the way to the River Ain. We stayed there for the night, or a few hours, and then we went off to cross the Ain next morning. My God, it was across too, that was. And I mind that it was going to come well first, and all there was the Ain, there's a river, and a few yards further on there's a canal. So you see, it's a canal, the river goodbye. See, what the Germans had done, they'd blown up they'd left the canal intact, the first of the canal, but blown up the bit over the river. It was very, very high. And what the engineers had to do, that's why we waited that night, was to throw a bridge as far as possible over from one side of the bridge up. They'd blown up. It was a distance of about, I suppose, it would be 10, 15 feet. It would have been blown up. Hell of a job. And we had to cross, when they got there, we had to cross these planks. Next day, corner. The next afternoon, it was a hell of a job. There's no railing, it's just bare planks, and they kept moving as you walked on them. Yeah? There's no support, there's only this plank support for the whole of the length of this plank, there's nothing, just two planks together. I don't know how they got that. And as you put one foot down, half dark and high, of course, as you put one foot down, you see, the weight of your body, the board, as you lift the foot, sprang up and met the other foot before you could get it down to the ground. It was a hell of a job getting across. And we lost a few men, and you could hear the roaring water about 20 or 30 feet below, the river rushing by. And we lost a few men down, fell over.
Oh, and people actually fell in?
Yes, fell in from the plank. And we got across, and our colonel, I always remember the colonel on this one here, he stood the other side, he went across first. He stood the other side of the bridge and called about my name and helped them, that's what he got. And I remember him saying to one man, there's a sergeant in front of me, his name was Jarvis, I remember now, and he's very, very timid. And I remember as he went, he halted and stopped, and I gave him a bit down. He got across in the end, I heard the colonel say to him, and what's your name? He said, Sergeant Jarvis. So, are you all right? He said, yes. So we helped him over. Anyway, we've got across, and by 12 o'clock, we'd taken over 800-900 men across the plank. Marvellous it was, really. So we got across the river.
They didn't run up a rope or something for you to hold on to as you went across them? They didn't put a rope or something like that?
No, nothing. It's just all the planks supported by kind of boxes or something. There's no There was no rope to hold on by. You see, you walk on this bank. A hell of a job it was getting across. Anyway, you got across here, and yeah, we...
You weren't under fire at this time? You weren't under fire
at all? They were shedding a bit, not much, when these shells were coming over. But we walked up and up about a mile or a half to Hindid Arms, the ladies' way. That was the Germans held that. And we a good position. They take the position high above the river, you see, so they got they'd look down on the river. There was a lot of woods in the river, so they couldn't see the river properly, but they got a good idea of it. And we dug trenches and occupied these trenches near them. And we were fighting there. We had mandatory attacks, obviously, and we had to attack them, but there's no advantage.
What can you remember about that? Well, taking first, what were the trenches like that you dug? Were they getting deeper yet? Or
we had to dig them ourselves. Only normal, not a deep trenches, just cover, really.
So how deep would these be?
Just cover from your head and shoulders. And wouldn't you probably be at...
What were the German trenches like? Would they be roughly...
And I never did see theirs. I see them.
What can you remember of the attacks that you made and they made? What could you describe?
Yes,
what
I'll tell you what the thing that influenced me about their attack. We always knew when they were coming because they used to blow a bugle. And every time they'd get ready to do open fire on them, because they never did get into our trench. Never. We had a lot of wounded there, shell fire. We had a. When every second was shouting, stretcher bearer, almost every minute with the wound from shell fire.
Was this still shrapnel? There was no high explosive yet, was
No.
What about the attacks you made on the Germans? Were you ever in an attack on the Germans?
Yes, we got driven back. Didn't get the...
How would it be all... What can you remember about the attack there?
Well, you'd get perhaps 50 or so yards and couldn't get any more, and you just come back. I remember they...
Why not? Why? Was it just the amount of fire?
Yes, their fire, yes. Their fire was really heavy. And but we got more casualties from shrapnel. Every shell that came over, every shrapnel that came over, every stretcher bearer, somebody got wounded. Every one. And I never knew the force of shrapnel, really, until I was lying on a the side of a road, and there was a high bank on the side of this road, where Pearson and I was, and a shell burst above my head, and some of the shell, I was close to the bank, I was a rubber foot, and a shrapnel ball burst onto the road, this metal road that led from the A into the road we went to, and to see that ball go in there, and all that main, I thought to myself, I never thought they got the force behind it, I always remember that, it seemed so. The terrific force that shrapnel shell ball had got. It entered, I suppose, the hard gravel road about 2 inches.